The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
Welcome, everyone, to Wrestling to the Max's Payback 2017 review, and we are brought to you by W2Mnet.com. That's right, the great place where you go find plenty of wrestling, sports, video games, and entertainment. Also, don't forget to go check us out on iTunes, where you can go subscribe and rate and review. We appreciate everyone who's already done that. And so, also, we'll just throw out this. We are also going to give you a great Raw review that'll be taking place. So if you're listening to this, maybe you already listened to the Raw review and you wanted to go back, or maybe you're listening to this first, go check out the Raw review that will give you the fallout from Payback 2017, plus our normal episodes of Wrestling to the Max. I am your host, Gary Vaughn. Of course, with me is Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
Mr. Sean Garmer.
What's up, everybody?
And guys, we've got a show here to really delve into, one that will kind of move us on past this whole, transition phase we're going through with WWE. Of course, we had plenty of superstars transferring over, and a couple of these matches had some crossover since that's taken place with the whole shakeup. So, it's going to be kind of fun. It's going to be kind of interesting to see how the rest of this thing is going to go out. But before we start this whole thing, I do want to say that I personally didn't get a chance to watch the pre-show, so I didn't watch any of the kickoff stuff, but these two guys did. So I'm gonna start off by asking you, Sean, how did the first match go? I mean, we had Enzo Amore and of course Kaz facing off against Gallows and Anderson. So what did you think about that match? We had, of course, kind of like we predicted, Enzo and Kaz winning here, but what did you think about that match?
It was a match. It was a match you could see on Raw. Nothing too special. These guys have wrestled before, so it's not like, we were just totally looking forward to this. But it was fine, And Enzo and Cass win, kind of like we thought it would, or they would. And then, I guess they are in the running for a tag title shot at some point. I don't know how this works anymore sometimes.
That's right on cue, man. That's right in the way I'm thinking of it, too, because I'm like, this really feels like a pre-show match because it really doesn't matter. I don't know, Paul, what do you think?
I mean, the match wasn't anything to write home about. It was solid. It was fine. It wasn't bad. I don't get the Enzo and Cass win here either, but they're going to do what they're going to do at this point. I'm with Sean, though. I don't know what's happening in this tag division other than that the Hardys are tops. That's really all we know.
Yeah, and we didn't have a chance to talk about this as a whole, and me and Sean did a little bit on Thursday. And, Paul, I'm really kind of curious how you feel about this. I'm really concerned about the direction of the tag team division because of just what you just said about the Hardys and the fact that they continue to look great, which is awesome. But on the other hand, everybody else is kind of in, I guess, purgatory. I guess we'll say it that way. They kind of just are there. They're doing nothing. They're kind of trading 50-50 wins here and there. So this is a loss for all of us. But they've got to change something. I don't even know what they can do at this point to really change it. Did the Revival being out of this whole mix really screw up their plans? Do you really feel that was what happened here?
I think so. I mean, do you look at the Revival for the 2 weeks they're on the main roster? They're getting strong wins over everybody. They were clearly being put in a position to do something worthwhile, and the injury came, and now I think it's sort of thrown them for a loop. They don't really know what to do outside of just booking the Hardy strongly, which is fine, because if you're going to do the broken thing at some point, then you want them to be on the tip of everybody's tongue anyways, but there's...
I think they already are, though. Matt went full-blown with it on after yesterday.
I don't know if I would call it full-blown. There are a lot. He was much more prevalent with it, and they caught more of it on camera.
Oh no, I mean like on Twitter today. Go look at his Twitter. He's going with it today.
He's been doing all sorts of crazy stuff on Twitter though. Like
he got the green beans out.
The green beans tweet was magical. If nobody's seen that, you guys should definitely go find that.
He was going at it with Sheamus and all. Like I think that they've probably been told that there's been either they're wrapping it up or that they're making some headway or something. Like I cannot imagine that. I know Matt doesn't. He's kind of like in that mode where he doesn't care, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't want WWE's legal team coming, you know, knock on the door being like, hey, dude, stop doing it. I'd imagine if he was doing it a lot more yesterday, it's because there's some kind of progression being made in this thing. So, but it was nice getting to see them enjoy it, or getting to see him like getting to, you know, really enjoy it and everything yesterday more than in the past since he's been there.
Yeah, let's talk about that. We'll go ahead and throw in that match as well so we can kind of full-blown get into this whole tag division on Raw. You know, we did have the Hardys come out and face Cesaro and Sheamus for the titles, and this was a pretty decent match itself. It was for myself. I watched this. In fact, I'll be honest with everybody. I watched it in the car on the ride home last night. So maybe I didn't get the full potential of sitting in front of my nice TV at the house. But from what I was seeing, I really thought it was a decent match. Nothing super great. Like Sean said, I think we did see a little bit more of the broken thing with, you know, Delete. I saw that more than I've seen in a long time with Matt. And, of course, you know, getting a few other things going here. But in the end, the Hardys win. Like always, you know, they find a way to get the victory here. And we had the handshake at the end of the match. We think, okay, blah, 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 Cesaro and Sheamus are going to walk out. Well, and then next thing you know, Cesaro and Sheamus attack the Hardys full blown and, you know, pretty much take care of them and leave them laying in the, you know, middle of the ring and on the outside. So we have now really fully Cesaro turning the way of Sheamus and going complete heel here, which they really did need, I feel, to kind of, you know, balance out this tag division. What do you think about all this after the aftermath of this match, Paul? I mean, what you saw and everything.
So this is sort of what I was getting at. This is a great way, I think, to introduce sort of some of the broken mannerisms. Yeah, Jeff Hardy broke a tooth during this match. The post-match attack was really focused on rattling him around the head and stuff on the posts. And the match is pretty good. I enjoyed this a lot. I thought they worked well together. And it's hard not to when you have four, you know, pretty great workers in there. So I was a fan of all this. I thought the heel turn was unexpected. I thought they were going to keep the sportsmanship thing going for a while. But these two sort of stepping up and being their immediate rivals, I think it makes a lot of sense. They're the best team in the Raw division as far as wrestling skill goes. So if you want somebody to make sure the Hardys keep looking good, these two are your guys.
I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was really good. I actually kind of saw it there. If you pay attention to Raw, this actually makes total sense, right? They have been being nice, and Sheamus kept getting in the way and whatever, and then finally they just snapped because they got tired of losing. Like they're like, okay, we're being nice, and we're like trying to be like, you know, good guys and all this, and making it about the match and all that, and well, it's not working, so we got to do something else. And I really enjoyed that. I like that this felt sort of organic and not like, oh, we're forcing it because they have to do it. You might say that yes, perhaps it wouldn't have happened had Revival been around, but I like this for them. And can we? I know that it's another 15 minutes of Raw that you gotta watch technically, but every time they do this after a pay-per-view, it shows you how important having a Raw talk after Raw is over would be really beneficial for some of these guys. Cesaro still is kind of not the greatest on the microphone, but I thought that the two on Raw talk were really good together, and it helps them sort of, in a way, not have to be in character, but they can still sort of promote what they're doing and talking about the turn and whatever in a different way than just being out there and talking about it. So, look, I know it's adding another 15, 20 minutes to the show or whatever, but it's beneficial for those guys to have that, very much like on SmackDown, you get it. You know, and then they've been good about it doesn't have to be 30 minutes, right? They don't stretch out if they don't need to. It could be 10 minutes, and it's fine. Just to get the point across and get the guests on there that you need. But, man, the Hardys were really good in this. I enjoyed them. Cesaro is incredible. Seriously, that man, he just does stuff that a man that size should not be able to do. And it's
the height on that leg drop was ridiculous.
And it's that spinning elbow thing. Every time I see it, it's amazing. Like, it's just like, wow. I know they have to know how great of a athlete he is. It's just, I wish he could be in a bigger spotlight. But, you know, time will come, I think, eventually for him. And it was just not like... it'd be fun when, you know, Jeff can embrace the brother Nero, too, because they were really loud for that. I mean, it helped a lot. That San Jose crowd, obviously, the first time it wasn't a celebrated event, but it was the first time NXT ever had a WrestleMania thing was in San Jose. And since then, I feel like you've kind of gotten to see them be this sort of, you know, intelligent crowd or whatever. And it really helped almost all the matches on this show.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, I love this fact that, you know, we're gonna have an opportunity now to see Cesaro, like you said, Sean, more on the heel side of things. We haven't seen him there in a while, too, so it's a little bit more fresh for me. Sheamus is kind of, I hate to say it this way, but he's probably a lifelong heel. I don't ever really see him being a super babyface. It would take a lot. I don't think people care about Sheamus enough to make him that super baby face anyway. So I like this. I'm really kind of curious where this tag division is going to go.
I think the only time it worked is when he had the commercials.
Yeah, no, that was awesome.
1-800 Sheamus. Yeah. It's magical.
1-800 fella. Oh, I love it. So, yeah, if they do that again, we'll have that for sure. It'd be nice. But, yeah, I mean, this tag division is not great, right? And we're in a situation where we're kind of waiting to find out what the next step is. But I think at least
this WWE tag team as a whole is not great. Neither one are really just magical or anything.
Oh, yeah, and you're completely right. SmackDown is not much better. So that's what they need to do. Get back on working on these tag teams again. We'll see if they do that. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about something else in the pre-show. That way we can move on to this main card. I want to talk about the Miz TV segment here. You guys, like I said, got a chance to watch this. I'm really kind of curious. Paul, how did you feel about this with Finn Balor and Miz, and what did you get out of it?
I thought this was really good, simply just because both guys simply brought it on the microphone. Miz was his usual awesome self on these, talking down to Finn about how much wasted potential he has because he keeps getting hurt, or, you know, you've done great everywhere else, but here you've yet to really deliver unlike he has, and all these other great things. And I don't know, I really enjoyed this segment overall. I thought I would look forward to a feud between these two, which I assume is what we're going to get going forward.
I kind of hope I mean, I'm glad that they have several seeds planted with Finn, because, you know, you got Bray as well that's at certain times was hinting for, you know, he wants to get the demon out or whatever. And that's good. They need to do that more often, honestly. Even if they don't do the Bray thing later and they do Miz first or whatever it is that they decide to do. I actually like that. Have several guys in line for someone so that if you don't pull the trigger 3 or 4 months later, you go, hey, look, we planted the seeds here. Even though WWE sometimes is bad about wanting to promote that you did something 4 months ago because, oh, we're stupid. But it's nice. It's like, so you don't have this just random, here's random pairing number one happening. This is good. Finn, what Paul was talking about, with Miz kind of hitting in his injuries, it left open for Finn to remind everybody, hey, I was Universal Champion, even though it was for 24 hours, and I don't care if Brock's Universal Champion. I want my title back. So there's another thing. Are we going to get that? Are we going to get Finn and Brock? I mean, how awesome would that be? I think we're all in a vote here of wanting to see that match.
If it happens at the Dallas show, I mean, makes it must go for me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm going to refuse to call that pay-per-view by its actual name. But
apparently,
the Dallas show.
Apparently, the Jerry Lee Lewis people are, considering whether they want to do something about that or not. Well, so
they should. Sue the pants off them. Come on. That
absolutely.
Way
yeah.
Yeah. Please. Hey, just call it Balls of Fire. It's better than Great Balls of Fire.
Or I think somebody was saying, like, call it Spears of Fire or something. Like, that sounds better than Balls of Fire. I'm like, come on. I mean, you can't make memes of Spears of Fire. And maybe that's – somebody had to be drunk and go, oh, my God, look at all these memes. Somebody needs to let's call this next interview Great Balls of Fire so we can have memes everywhere. Because that's all this is going to be. Like, until July, we're going to get all kinds of somebody with balls of fire joke or whatever until then. It's just –
someone must have put Icy Hot in Vince's underwear or something. I don't know. But, you know, yeah. Well, let's pray to God they change that. Oh, that's just terrible. But anyway, you know, I'm really kind of, you know, happy to see that they give Finn a little bit more of an opportunity to get on the mic and speak a little bit through this Miz TV segment. Once again, it's on the pre-show. Let's see how many people actually watched it. You know, I missed it, and I'm sure plenty of other people did, too. So I don't know how much that helps you unless you're doing this on a Monday Night Raw, unless you're doing this on a pay-per-view actual card instead of doing it before everything starts. So they need to do this, though, more often with Finn. That way people can get more acquainted with him and not just see him come out every once in a while. We'll see what they do, though. Let's start the show out, though, by actually talking about the U.S. title match between Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho. And, of course, you know, everybody loved Chris Jericho for sure. I mean, he really got a nice little pop there when he came out. And, you know, it led into this match. And I think, you know, we got something that I did not expect at all, really. I thought this was a decent match. I enjoyed it. I think Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens did a pretty good job. Jericho got a lot more offense than I ever expected. And he also won the match. That was the biggest thing here. I was a little bit blown away that they did that because, let's be honest, we all talked about it. Kevin Owens wins. That way he's still on SmackDown. He's strong. He's a U.S. champion. And Chris Jericho goes and plays his guitar or does whatever he does, sings with Fozzy. And here we are, guys. Chris Jericho won. So, I mean, where do we go from here?
I mean, things just got a little bit more interesting than they for the match is awesome. I really love this. Is a great opener. I love the attack on the hand, especially after WrestleMania with Kevin Owens getting the rope break with the finger, and Jericho says, "Well, F that," and then throws his hand in between the stairs and kicks them, and then that plays directly into the finish. I thought was great. Everything else about this I really love too. Chris Jericho, even at the end, signing the kids list on the outside was awesome. I loved that.
Yes.
The thing I think I like long-term booking, if people are going to go all the way back, is that AJ Styles has a chance to get his win back from WrestleMania, which is even greater.
I didn't think about that. I did not put that into play at all. And that's actually a really great thought there, Paul. And that would be great for AJ. It would really make him look a lot better. And not only that, I will give him this. The Chris Jericho victory came out of nowhere. I think everybody thought that they were right on key. If they predicted this card, that was the one that they were going to get a gimme, right? That was Kevin Owens no matter what. So that was it was a kind of interesting surprise. I'm with you, too. I love the attention he gave to the hand on Kevin Owens. That was great. It looked brutal. So, Sean, what did you think about all this?
The match was terrific. They had the nice callbacks to their previous match. I feel like Jericho, along with his character and everything else, you know, his wrestling has gotten better as he's progressed in this run. After he got done with the Ambrose stuff, I feel like he kind of locked in more, and he's gotten more like to the old Jericho when he's come back before, where we're not questioning his wrestling there, which is, that's a plus. Because, you know, he had the one great match on SmackDown with AJ, but a large part of the AJ matches were not really good. You know, they were kind of just good, and you were expecting a lot more out of them. So hopefully with AJ and Jericho in better places at this point, because AJ is miles better than when he first got there, when he's starting to adjust, you know, to the style and everything, they could put on a phenomenal match. So, you know, it is, I'm happy to see that. And I was confused at first because I thought that meant that Kevin Owens is going back to Raw, but apparently not. It's just Jericho is the only one that moves to SmackDown. So this is actually really good because it gives SmackDown another main eventer at whenever it is that Jericho comes back. It looks, I think Kevin Owens beat him up afterwards or something. So it's going to be interesting. That's good for SmackDown, and now Raw can kind of focus on some other people too.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, once again, with Jericho being gone for we don't know how long. We really don't. No one, I don't even know if WWE knows when Jericho is going to be back and actually get back into the swing of things, because when he takes these, you know, hiatuses away and does Fozzy and does a few other projects, I think Chris Jericho just keeps the door open when they want him back. And I don't know when that'll happen, but when he does come back, like you said, Sean, adding him on to that SmackDown roster gives them a boost and really, you know, helps them when it comes to really getting people to want to watch SmackDown, because Chris Jericho, as you could tell, everybody loves him. The crowd is nuts for him, but not only that, this whole, you know, List of Jericho thing and him signing the autograph for the kid doing the list thing, that was great. So, I mean, there's no one better. If down the line SmackDown just needs that extra guy, he's there and available for him. And, you know, Raw gets there, so then we don't have to worry about Raw. So, but yeah, I'm really curious to see SmackDown now. I'll be honest with you guys. When SmackDown rolls around this Tuesday, I will be glued to my TV. Let's talk about the Cruiserweight division here, okay? So we have, you know, plenty of build-up to this whole thing with 205 Live and, of course, on Monday Night Raw with Neville being the champion and Austin Aries being the guy that has tried his best to win the Cruiserweight Championship off of Neville at WrestleMania. They had a pretty awesome match and really did a good job. Here on this one, I think they did a pretty decent job too. I think both these guys are just a ton of fun to watch. They're both such great talents in the ring. This was a little bit shorter than I expected. I mean, I get it because of the finish, but we have Austin Aries disqualified because of the referee bump. So that takes away, you know, Austin Aries' chance to win without losing clean, right? This just makes both guys still kind of come out of this looking the same. No difference than we had before the match. Neville's still your champion, and Austin Aries is still chasing. Sean, I mean, how do you feel about all this? Do you think they went the right way with this match? And do you like the fact that this can continue?
Yeah. We're talking about the
Cruiserweight Championship.
These two, every time they get in there, sorry, these people in one of these chats are distracting me. These two, every time they have a match, it's, you know, it's going to be good. I was surprised we didn't get any TJP involvement here, so that's kind of interesting. Don't know if they're just kind of trying to build that in a different way or whatever, but I kind of thought TJP would get involved and like cost Aries the match or whatever. But this is an interesting way to do it, much more so that Neville keeps his heel persona strong, and attacking the ref is, it's a cheap thing. You hate seeing that, but when you think about it, Aries is still the only guy that really gets the crowd. Like, look, Jack Gallagher is great, but I think the majority of the crowd sees him as a comedy act. You know, as much as you love him and you say, oh, he has some interesting moves and everything else, but let's be real, you know, that's kind of what he's there to be. So, you know, Austin Aries is still that, like, one guy that everybody pays attention to in that division. And I think the longer you can keep that going with Neville and make it interesting and put roadblocks in his way and all that kind of stuff, keeps it going, and it's not, and you don't have to have them trade the belt back and forth or whatever. You can have Neville still be champion, still be, you know, the king of the cruiserweights or whatever, and you keep Aries chasing for as long as you can make it viable and interesting.
I don't have a problem with the finish in particular either. The only thing I think it kind of was a downer for is because the match was so much fun leading up to all that. The fluidity here between both guys was incredible. The way they were stringing the moves together, all this. This felt different from everything else on the show. And I think that's what I appreciated most about this, because that's what this division is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be something different. And I'm okay with them getting another chance, especially if it's going to be, you know, no DQ or I quit or submission or however they're going to go about trying to accomplish this finish for the feud. I'm okay with it. So let's see where they go.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to see how this does transfer over back when we get back to Raw and, of course, 205 Live, because, you know, someone somewhere, TJP, you know, these other guys are going to be wanting that chance to get at that title. And, you know, Austin Aries is the one guy keeping him out of that path. So I also like that added part of this whole feud and what's going on. And, hey, I'm never going to complain about seeing Austin Aries and Neville. They've shown me twice that they work excellent together. So give me more, honestly. Let's move on, though, and let's talk about another match that I thought was kind of interesting. One that, you know, we've been kind of trying to, you know, follow here and see what was going to be, you know, taking place. But that one, of course, is going to be the Raw Women's Championship match. And this takes place between Bayley and Alexa Bliss. And this is another one where we were really kind of curious how they were going to go because of everything surrounding these two individuals. Of course, you have Nia Jax, you have Sasha Banks, who are all trying to also get this title away from Bayley and really try to change things up here. But Alexa Bliss, you know, it has a pretty decent match with Bayley, and she ends up getting the victory. I mean, I did predict it. I really felt like they were going to do this because, really, it's almost like a trading two number one draft picks, right? I think Charlotte and Alexa Bliss are both probably the best in the women's division when it comes to WWE in general. So Alexa Bliss winning does not a big surprise for me. What did you guys think, Sean? I mean, how did you feel about that?
You know, this is interesting that they decided to go ahead and have Bayley lose the belt here. You know, they, if they're, I guess they'll find a way to continue the Sasha and Bayley thing with whether Sasha gets a title shot now or what they decide to do if they go straight for the rematch again. You can build a little bit of tension there. You know, I was surprised that Sasha didn't even appear at all. So that's also interesting. I wonder how they're going to deal with that, you know, on Raw. But I enjoyed this match again. I think this is one of Alexa Bliss's better matches, if not her best one. And they told a good story with the Bayley, her head, and constantly going back to that, and the head playing into the finish, and Alexa Bliss didn't even have to do her finisher because she had done so much to Bayley's neck and like head area that she just did a DDT, which, hey, I'm sure Jake the Snake was very proud of that moment that you're winning with a DDT because you did so much trauma to that area. So I like that callback, and hey, look, Alexa Bliss, it's celebration time, big record for her. You know, I wonder if they're going to play it up more on Raw. They didn't play it, you know, Alexa Bliss made the joke on talking on Raw Talk. That's like, where's my balloons? Where's all my stuff? You know, I just broke a record here. She is great. And I want to see what they're doing forward, you know.
I feel like the Simpsons, you know, when Homer broke the 300 mark and the little balloon, the 300 falls down out of the ceiling. Oh, that would be classic. But, yeah, I mean, I know I totally agree with you, Sean, on this, because I think that they had a great formula here in this match because of the fact, really, I mean, Bayley came out looking really strong, right? I mean, bashing Alexa Bliss's head into the turnbuckles, doing all this different, you know, offensive moves that really kind of made you feel, oh, she's going to be in control. And then it turns, and it's a total switch. And the next thing you know, Bayley's done, and she loses, you know, this match. So, I mean, Paul, I mean, I think this is interesting, but I kind of felt like it should have taken place like this. I think, you know, you need someone new, and especially someone you want to put at one of the top heels in that division to win this match.
I'm okay with it overall. I'm not a fan of the commentary at the end of this because they made it seem like it was a lucky break for Alexa at the end there. And I feel like there's a better way to play off of that than saying it was lucky or something like that. But at any rate, I mean, that's really nitpicky. Alexa getting the big win here is fine. I assume we'll either get a title switch or Sasha will win it or something like that. There needs to be that coming around for Bayley and Sasha if they're still planning on doing it for SummerSlam. And if this is only done to give that some extra length or whatever, I think that's fine because you know Alexa is she's great in the champion role. She's awesome in her character. She's going to knock this out and be just fine even if she does lose the title back in a month or two.
Yeah, and I think she will. I'm looking to see maybe a multi-woman match pretty soon here where all those women are involved. And once again, some way, somehow, either you have Bayley winning it or Sasha winning it. But I think it's either those two. Nia Jax, I don't see just yet because, like you said, we've got to get to that journey of, you know, Sasha and Bayley. We've got to see it happen. I kind of feel like that's setting up for SummerSlam. Could be completely wrong. Maybe it's later, but I could see that happening. And they're going to have to find a way to get the belt off Alexa Bliss. Yeah, I think that could be one way. So, and
With you on the SummerSlam thing, by the way, Gary. I think that's definitely where they're going with this.
Yeah, but you don't see a flip flop, right? I don't see, oh, Bayley gets another shot at the next show, and then Bayley wins.
Don't say that
yeah.
Because that's all they've done with this title.
I know. I don't want. So that just
except for when Bayley's had it for a little bit, which is weird because it's like of all the people that you expect to have the title for a long period. You know, aside from when Charlotte had it for a while, you know, and Charlotte and Sasha slipped it back and forth, is Bayley. She's the one supposed to be chasing the thing. You know, it's just, you gotta at some point here figure out who you want to put the damn thing on and build it for a while and stop doing the, oh, well, let's have it on Sasha for a month, let's have it on Bayley for a month, let's have it on Alexa, like, you know, Sasha and Bayley, the first one doesn't have to be for the title. You know, they've got so much going on. You could have them be having a match that's not for the title, and then you find a way to involve Alexa. You know, I still subscribe to the theory that WWE should be able to have more than just the women's title match going on as far as women's feuds and do this effectively. You have how many men's feuds? The next progression and making people care about the women is you got to have more than one feud going on and make it work.
They've done that to an extent on SmackDown. We've yet to see them really accomplish that on Raw.
Yeah, very true. I mean, they had three going on at one point on SmackDown.
Right.
Like, two different writing teams, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, however this works, I mean, I think the end game when it does come to SummerSlam, and of course, the way this all does work out, I think it's going to be a lot more intriguing. And of course, you know, the way they build up between Sasha and Bayley is, I think, what we're all looking forward to. So let's talk about a match that maybe we do or don't want to talk about. Let's talk about the House of Horrors match between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton. Oh, my God. I'm trying to think even how to start this thing. This was interesting. These two guys had a so-called match in a haunted house. Let's just say it this way. Randy Orton gets a refrigerator dumped on him after a bunch of creepy things and a regular little haunted house. I'll let these guys explain what they want to explain because to me it's not really worth a lot to go through. But you really have to see it to really understand what we're talking about here. But at the end, yes.
No, you don't have to waste 12 minutes of your life. You don't have to see it at all. Just know that they tried something and it was a mixture of see no evil and we're in a house,
yeah,
fighting each other, and I still don't. I guess Randy took Bray's powers or something because that he can't teleport to the ring.
That this example doesn't make sense. Okay, so we get the refrigerator dump on Randy Orton. Bray Wyatt gets out of the house, gets in a limo, and tells the guy driver to the arena. So. And the only other thing that changes, I guess it's supposed to creep us out. The house.
And hold on, let me tell you something. You get a refrigerator dropped on you, you're not standing.
Right. That's the end of the night for you.
Well, I mean, that refrigerator did not look too. I don't know that I.
Even if it doesn't have anything in it, it's still a refrigerator.
I guess so.
Those things are not light.
Well, trust me, I've moved plenty of them in my lifetime. It sucks, but I've done it. And I know they're heavy, but that did not look like the industrial ones.
I mean, Randy Orton is a 200-pound dude.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, we're not talking it's like
about Jack Gallagher here.
But still, like, you know, you couldn't.
Well, it's on a 400-pound guy. That's still the end of the night. Like,
I mean, like, you don't even have any kind of tape on him or, like, you can't. Please don't tell me he didn't go get medical attention. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, WWE doesn't think about these things, obviously.
No. But it's and just, why would they? They just put you through a haunted house.
I know, but look, you're leaving the haunted house, right? It is now back to reality. Like, it's like, okay, if you are in some spiritual realm and you get out of it, all of a sudden your chest and body is going to be hurting, right? You're going to go, okay, I just had a refrigerator dumped on me. Like, unless they're saying that the House of Horrors is like I just said, in some kind of spiritual realm where it's not in reality, he didn't just walk into an actual real house, then okay. But I don't think that's what they were trying to say here.
It's not. Because Bray Wyatt gets into a limo. It's if it wasn't the limo thing, I could buy into the spiritual thing. I'm like, okay, yes, it's in another realm.
I think I think Bray, didn't Randy say he took Bray's powers? So
he said something
he can't
like
do
that.
It.
I think it was something about breaking them, not really taking them.
Yeah, so his teleportation is broken.
But I would rather him get into an old beat up pickup truck and drive himself.
Well, that the limo was there already. I mean, what are you going to
do? I know, but I just think of Bray Wyatt, who he is. Like, I don't see The Undertaker coming out and saying, all
right.
Well,
but he shouldn't be driving after that, though.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to be.
I guess he could have had Rowan driving the truck, right?
Yeah. I'm just saying. All I'm saying is they've taken. I'll get into my rant in a minute here. Let's just finish this out. So the house goes from blue to red with a magical snap of your fingers. Bray Wyatt ends up at the arena and makes his little entrance. Then when he the lights come up, Randy Orton's behind him. Randy Orton attacks him, beats the crap out of him, basically takes him out until the Bollywood Boys or whatever they call him now attack Randy Orton.
Singh
he takes
brothers.
Care of them. The Singh brothers. Thank you. So the Singh brothers attack, Randy Orton takes care of him very easily. Jinder Mahal comes from behind and basically takes out Randy Orton. And then, guess what? Bray Wyatt takes advantage and wins the match. So Sister Abigail, 1, 2, 3. So really, all that you do is get Bray Wyatt winning here, but not really looking strong at all. And then you get the Singh brothers beaten up, and Mahal stands tall, but I don't know how much this really does for Mahal because he's just attacking from behind. I mean, it's good for the fact that he looks kind of strong, but this is nothing super spectacular. Bray Wyatt takes a big hit for me. I am not happy after this. This was a terrible looking segment with a whole House of Horrors. I didn't like the ending of this. Mahal's fine. It's not against Mahal. It's more about the Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt feud for me. I don't know, Paul.
I feel like I'm going to be in the minority here. There are parts of this I thought were good. And them fighting in a house was fine, because that's what I expected this to be. It being so overproduced really took you out of it, though. All of the cuts, the constant cutting to trying to give you a sense of the rooms they're in, instead of just letting them tell the story via what they're doing, I felt like was a mistake. I think they missed a real opportunity and telling you that it has to end in the ring at some point instead of just letting this be some organic thing that takes place throughout the evening would have added some more to this. At least you could have done more and felt surprised if they ended up back in the arena or something like that. And I think they missed another real opportunity. Bray should have set the house on fire. I think that would have been a great, you need to call back on this feud that you've already put so much work into, and they missed an opportunity there. And then I didn't have a problem with the finish, honestly. Mahal needs heat. I think this does that. Bray looks strong walking out of the house and winning this match. I'm not going to say this is like a home run or anything like that, and it's definitely not good, but there are parts of this that I'm okay with.
I mean, look, Bray winning is this important part. It furthered the Randy Orton Jinder Mahal thing. Jinder, I guess, still has the title. Which, that also made sense as to why it wasn't for the title, because Jinder had it. And I think, well, for one, the fire would have to be computer generated because that's an actual real house. That's not like that shack thing that they...
They could have had fire teams on standby. There's ways you can get around that without having to go digital.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but it's like... That looked like... I don't know if somebody lives in it or not, but it looked like something they could have for sale if they wanted to. I mean, so it... I don't know. I thought it was a little bit... But, you know, you have a point. Like, they could have called back to the whole, hey, you burned... I'm going to burn this house with you in it, or whatever. But it just... Some of the stuff is just weird, because it looked really... The effects were kind of just... You know, the lights flickering, and it's obviously not, like, real lights flickering, and that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, you go in the room, and... It's just a bunch of dolls and this weird crucifix-looking thing. I get the visual, but it's not scary. It did not make me be horrified at all. Just, I don't know. It was very PG horror.
Yeah, very PG horror. I mean, I really enjoyed some of the stuff we saw on Impact with Decay, and you know, even the Hardy Compound. That stuff was, you know, kind of creepy. To an extent, compared to what we got here. This was very goosebumps, very... I mean, I think I would have been scared if I was 5 or 6. If I was 8, 9, 10, I may not be. You know, here's the thing. I think, you know, Paul, you're on to something with lighting the house on fire. And what I would have liked to do, and if I could book this, if I could have been the one in charge, what I would have either done is, if I really wanted Bray Wyatt to come out with a win... I agree with burning the house down. I want Randy Orton to burn the house down again and say, look, I'm done with you, Bray. I'm telling you, I figured this thing out, and burn the house down with Bray in it. And then, and going back also to your point of being overproduced, go back to the Attitude Era. Film like they did sometimes with a camera crew like Cops. Film from behind and follow them the entire way through. That feels scary. Like you're wrecked with him during this entire journey. That would have kind of been terrifying a little bit, to be honest with you, with the whole raw feeling of just, oh, I'm live with this guy. Mm-hmm. And then burn the house down. And then you have maybe Bray Wyatt off TV for 2 months. Bring him back darker than he was. Maybe he's coming back from the dead. Maybe only Sister Abigail could bring Bray Wyatt back from the dead. Something like that. Now Bray Wyatt comes on Monday Night Raw, and I'm just going to look at him as like, you know, you were a guy I used to like, but now I'm just kind of feel like you're just there. I'm waiting for you to get jobbed out. Maybe you and your brother can get together and join the Wyatt family that's going to get jobbed out.
I mean, the point of all of this was to make sure Bray came out of this looking better than what he did. And I don't think they did that, but overall, he did win here. We always complain that he doesn't win enough, and even though it was sort of cheap at the end, he does walk out the victor. Hopefully they can prime him into something to capitalize on this, at least.
I just don't see any way Bray Wyatt can come out of this thing smelling any better unless he's darker. I don't see it. I know the fans love him. You got the crowd with the, you know, holding the phones up with the lights and all that, the fireflies. I just don't like it. I need Bray Wyatt to either get back to what he was.
I don't think that really means the fans love him, honestly. They just do that because it's part of being in the crowd and doing something mm-hmm. cool. So you really know what his fan base is, and it's diminished so much because of how much they've treated him, you know? So, like, you have a point. He needs to do something with that character to make a difference so that when he cuts his promos, it's not him just in vain saying stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You got to do something, very much like, you know, how Mankind went from dark to light. Sometimes you got to go from light to dark, you know, and make that turn back to being a little bit lighter or whatever. So I agree with you. You got to do something here. He can't just be same old Bray Wyatt and expect him to go somewhere.
You know how they have Fat Camp? They need to send Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt to character camp. And reinvent, do something. I don't know.
That would also require WWE to send some of their own people to character.
Yeah, I mean, they're handcuffed behind PG ratings here, too. So, I mean, I think they did as much as they were willing to do without stretching that.
Mm-hmm.
And also not spending a buku amount of money.
Right. Either, and so. Especially for somebody, for like us getting the impression, like it's sending out surveys about what they should do in this. Like they didn't have a clue what to do here either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You know, maybe they should have planned out better. This will be one of those things we'll talk about years from now with some of the worst things that they've done. And, you know, maybe Paul doesn't agree with us. I thought it was the silliest thing I've seen in a long time. But let's move on and talk about something else that I'm really curious how you guys feel about. This is the match between Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe. And, you know, I think both these guys actually put a lot of good effort into this. I really enjoyed what I saw. Of course, you know, we know Samoa Joe's got so much talent, and Seth Rollins is pretty darn good himself. So I don't think that was anything that was a big surprise. But we got a pretty decent match here. I love the fact that, you know, it looked like Samoa Joe was destroying the knee of Seth Rollins. They played up on that very much with all the submission holds and all that stuff that came into play. But in the end, with a roll-up kind of, you know, pin we have here, we do have Samoa Joe losing to Seth Rollins, which I didn't expect. I really felt like Samoa Joe was going to find a way to win. But once again, you know, they needed the babyface here in Seth Rollins to continue to look like he's strong. And not only that, he did beat Triple H. So that continues putting more skins on the wall for Seth Rollins. Sean, how did you feel coming out of this match?
Yeah, I mean, this match, again, it's very much like the Triple H match. I think it's one of these where you're going to wind up really liking it for being smart about going after the leg and everything. And then Rollins kind of winning by fluke after all the work on the leg. Or you're really not going to like it and think it was kind of slow and boring, very much like the Triple H match and whatever. So I saw this one kind of get mixed reviews or reactions when I was doing Twitter and all that stuff. So, and it's the only one that kind of got that. All the other matches got universal praise, you know, except for the House of Horrors got the universal just hate. But, I mean, it's so, you know, the thing is with Rollins is, you don't have I don't have any connection to him in his matches at all. He's, when he has a match, it's there for me right now. They have absolutely just not done anything with the character to make you go one way or the other. So he's just in the middle. And like, you know, Joe is great. Look, they're both great at wrestling, but also Joe is in this match. He's destroying. He's doing what he's supposed to do. When you don't have that emotional attachment to the babyface there, it's hard to care. So I'm just watching this match to watch it, and I thought it was good work, but you don't get what you need out of a match, which is being into it emotionally.
To be fair, Seth has only been faced since the injury, and he hasn't made a ton of appearances to really sort of capitalize on that. And even after him getting tossed out of Triple H's cadre there, you know, it was rough going then, just because I don't feel like they really knew what to do with him as a babyface. And I still think that's kind of part, like, they almost lucked into the injury because they at least have a direction for him, but he's still... I agree he's not connecting well, but at least there's something to him now as opposed to before, you know, where he's just sort of hanging out, being face guy. Now, I mean, at least you can connect with him because at least he's trying to fight against the odds, and he has the knee injury holding him back and all this stuff, which has worked on perfectly in this match. I think Joe was wonderful in his role here. Looked as strong as you possibly can without actually getting the victory, and this was going to be tough because both guys really need wins. Whether Seth is going to get back to the main event scene or Joe really needing it because he's still so new. And I think they played this as about as well as they could.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And the one thing I will say is that leads us to believe maybe the Samoa Joe either, you know, tries to attack Seth Rollins from behind again, or just moves on to somebody else and takes out his venom and anger on another person that's, you know, waiting a feud. So I'm really kind of curious to see how that's going to take place, but I really fully expect them to get Samoa Joe on a run. They've got to. They allowed a, you know, kind of a cheap victory, if you want to say it that way, for Seth Rollins over him. But now it's time to get Samoa Joe out to being the destroyer to start, you know, dominating. Now, I'm not saying on the realm of Braun Strowman, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying having smart, particular matches and really making Samoa Joe look tough. Because if down the line, if your goal eventually for Samoa Joe is Brock Lesnar, the guy has got to look like he's worthy of Brock Lesnar's time. So I'm really kind of curious to see how that'll take place. But Seth Rollins is the one that I'm really intrigued on because, you know, he's a great talent. I just want to know that next step for him. I've got to find it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they're just, you know, kind of thinking about doing with him.
I mean, that's just to touch on that. That's a problem I have with a lot of the guys on Raw right now, especially near the top of the card. Like, you don't know where to go anymore because of the title being with Brock, and you have both Roman and Braun off doing their thing. And that's really about it. Everybody else just feels sort of scattered around right now.
Yeah. I agree. It is very much like that. So, I mean, until we get Brock Lesnar back on scene and we get that title back in this whole thing, I think people are just kind of aimlessly going along. So
they're just hanging out, fighting each other because they got nothing better to do.
Yeah. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Let's fight. Okay, let's fight.
All right, let's fight. Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. So anyway, enough of Terrence and Phillip. Let's talk about, the next and the last actual match we have to talk about. And that is Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. And this is one that I think that we were kind of debating on, you know, the fact that, you know, Roman Reigns has been the guy that WWE has kind of hung their hat on when it comes to being the tough guy, being the guy. Even though he gets knocked down, he always gets back up again. You're never going to keep him down. And he is Roman Reigns, and he is very strong. And he comes out in this match limping, injured. You can still see the shoulder was bothering him, all taped up. So he sold this very well, in my opinion. I think Roman really gave us an opportunity to see that he is human. And Braun Strowman in this match is waiting to, and licking his chops, waiting to destroy him once again. I will say this, and maybe I'll get hate for it, maybe I won't, maybe people will agree with me, but I think Roman Reigns did a really good job in this match. I think Braun Strowman did a great job in this match for all the selling that they did on this whole, you know, Roman Reigns is fighting from underneath because he's already injured. He's trying to do anything he can to get Braun Strowman off his feet, discombobulated, anything he can do just to mess up Braun Strowman in this whole, you know, situation. In the end, though, Braun Strowman does get the victory, but that's really because of the, you know, previous attacks that, you know, Braun Strowman had done on Roman Reigns. That's why he got this victory. I really do feel like, Sean, that, you know, Roman still kind of looked good, even though he was definitely injured. I think he did a good job, and so I was not disappointed in this. I think they did the right thing.
No, this was the exact thing that you needed to do here. I was worried they'd still have Roman win. Mm-hmm. And so glad they didn't. So, you know, this is the perfect way to do this. They built up all these attacks, and then they kind of covered Roman a little bit, I think a little bit too much, in the afterwards. Like, you got to remember, like, you don't all of a sudden just, oh, I'm hurt, but all of a sudden, like, I'm going to just be able to beat up a guy after I'm hurt walking backstage. But at least they covered it with Braun, like, ran into a door first and ran into a bunch of stuff first and whatever. But, yeah, I mean, Braun getting the win here in a after Roman fought back a little bit is totally fine. It's great for him. It doesn't hurt Roman because he was injured a bunch of times. You had the mixed reaction from the crowd. So, again, you're getting the reaction you want. You're not going to get an overwhelming face reaction. Doesn't matter what they do. It's just they need to stop pretending that that's going to happen. But and they were muting the crowd like crazy in this match. It's ridiculous. It's just stop. Like, stop pretending that people don't boo him. Just stop it. You're idiots. Like, seriously. Just you're being dumb. And it's like, and you're in totally. The people that are watching on TV are being insulted. And I'm not talking about sports fans or smart fans. I'm talking about anybody. Like, that's insulting. Imagine if, like, you went to a sports event or you're watching a sports event and they go, oh, we're going to mute the crowd completely so you can't hear what's going on because we don't want this team getting cheered. Like, how stupid would that be? It's idiotic to me. It's just, we already know he gets booed. You know he gets booed. The whole world knows he gets booed. Just leave it alone.
Yeah, it is true. And, you know, like your sports analogy here, it's not like, you know, LeBron James goes onto the court and the NBA, you know, turns the mic off, you know, in the arena. That way no one hears boos in an opposing arena, right? They don't, oh, no, LeBron James is loved everywhere. They keep that secret. No, they don't do that. So, I don't know. I think, you know, you got a point there, Sean. But, Paul, I mean, coming out of this, I mean, what was your thoughts and opinions about this whole thing?
I really enjoyed this match a lot. This is another one that knocks it out of the ballpark with great storytelling. Braun looks all the monster he should be. Much like Sean, I thought they were going to do what they did with Brock and Cena during their first match, where Brock just absolutely dominates for most of the match, and then Cena comes out of nowhere, hits the one move, and wins, and that would be it. But they didn't, and I'm very glad they didn't. I mean, it's almost... I mean, if you're not feeling something for Roman at this point, then you're never going to. I mean, short of Braun actually cutting him open and, like, throwing his guts all over the ring, this is as close as you're going to get to, I think, anybody out there who's on the fence about Roman or already hates him. This is as close as I think you're going to get as turning them over to trying to cheer him. And if it's not going to work, it's not going to work. And you're going to get those mixed reactions. That's fine, because I think Roman is hitting with the people that they want him to hit with. And that's kids and that's women. And that's the same demographic that Cena hits with. So only time is going to fix everybody else, like it sort of has with Cena.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I did, coming out of this, having a lot more respect for the character of Roman Reigns, right? Mm-hmm. Because of all those sympathetic feelings you have for the guy that, you know, came out no matter what and fought this match and lost and kind of died on his sword, you know, kind of situation. So I appreciate it. And I think, you know, some of these other fans that completely hate Roman Reigns will eventually do that if they allow Roman Reigns to be human just like he was in this match. Now, we'll see. Maybe from here, you know, he wins, 1,000 matches, and then the next thing you know, he'll eventually get down the line, you know, 2 years from now, losing a match like this. I don't know. I hope they don't do that. I hope they keep Roman Reigns human, and I think that'll turn more people over. But you all, like you said, Paul, there will always be that sect that no matter what Roman Reigns does from here on out, they're going to hate him. And that's just the way it works in wrestling. It works in sports. It works in every sect of entertainment in general. So, that's pretty much what happened there in the main event. So there you go. We are complete with this payback episode, and we have to do a really quick, you know, rating for this and kind of see what we think. I mean, I think you guys are going to have some interesting ratings. If I was going to rate this show, I think looking at everything that we gave it, you know, when it came to respect for some of the things they did and maybe some of the things we even hated, I think it was an okay show. I was not overly thrilled with Payback. I think they made some decisions that were good. I think they made some decisions that made me kind of lower my rating. I'm going to go ahead. I was not overly thrilled, though, in general. I'm going to give it a 6. Maybe it's too low, but that's kind of the way I feel about it. I don't know. What do you think, Sean?
I'm going with I'm going to go with a 6.5, I think. Rollins and Joe had some issues, and the House of Horrors was bad. But everything else was good to really good. I don't think you had the one great standout match. I think I still enjoyed the Roman and Braun match from the previous one better. The pay-per-view went by fast. I didn't feel like I was sitting there for hours. They didn't try to overdo it. They had the pay-per-view end 20 minutes early. Well, they tried, and then they had the beatdown and the stuff before Raw Talk, which kind of made it end up going to all the way to 11. But, you know, and they didn't overdo Raw Talk. It was really quick and over, you know. So I appreciate that they sort of respected the fans' time. We didn't talk about this, but I feel like having the four title matches all at once was kind of weird. Like, couldn't you have Bayley? And the crowd is going to be pumped for Bayley no matter what, where you have it. Okay, I felt like they could have had Bayley and Alexa a little later, and I know you're putting them back in the death spot or whatever, but I felt like you could have had them there to so that the crowd's not so drowned out, because you had the House of Horrors thing, and then you immediately have that kind of slow match with Rollins and Joe, and it's kind of like, why? And then you have the House of Horrors again, and it's like, the hell, man? Like, this pacing is so weird. They did this the last pay-per-view too. They had this great, like, first half, and then the second half comes, and it goes down a little bit. And it's like, they need to start, they need to learn their pacing and like, figuring out which the match order much better than they have in the recent months here. Just, I felt like Bayley and Alexa could have gone in that spot before Braun and Roman, and you really had a hot crowd there that was ready to see them, ready to be excited again, and then you get the main event.
I don't know. Anything that had to follow the House of Horrors probably was going to suffer a whole bunch. So I'm kind of glad they front-loaded this, especially after, you know, what everybody saw. Because, I mean, during Joe and Seth, they were completely out of it. Like, the crowd was just... They had the life sucked out of them pretty much by having to watch that. So I'm going to go 6.5 on this too. There's a lot of great storytelling on this show, and that's, I think, what I appreciate the most is, yeah, there's good wrestling, and there's some really good stuff on here, but it's nothing like overly great or go out of your way to see or anything like that. But if you're interested in Raw, if you're interested in any of the feuds, I think most of them all hit the nail on the head as far as what they needed to tell you story-wise here. And the only thing I'm not looking forward to is that Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns are going to have an ambulance match in the future, and those always suck. So,
no. Yeah, as long as someone goes to the top of the ambulance again, right? So, we'll see. I did enjoy that with Cena. And was it Ambrose? Who was he facing?
I forgot already. Cena and Ryback.
Ryback, that's right, Ryback. I enjoyed the... I'm going to the top of the ambulance. That was fun. But anyway, yeah, we'll see. But, you know, I agree with you, Paul. There's a lot of greatness when it comes to setting up things for this Monday Night Raw. And, of course, if you want to come check it out, make sure you find us, and we will have a great review for you guys over that Monday Night Raw following Payback. It'll be really interesting because now we finally get a slate of just guys on Raw. Everything's going to be getting onto this new setup until we, you know, we see what's going to happen next. I'm really looking forward to it. I just want to see how they kind of come out of this thing. But yeah, if you want to go check that out, make sure you go check us out on iTunes, Wrestling to the Max. Of course, you'll find us also on W2Mnet.com and anywhere you can find a podcast. I always mention iTunes because that's really the place a lot of people use. And not only that, it's a place where you can go rate and review and all that. So make sure you go anywhere you find us on Spreaker, on heck, I mean, we even on Stitcher still. All these other places, go check us out. Also, don't forget, we have a regular episodes of Wrestling to the Max this week, part one and part two, so don't miss those. And, of course, a lot of great content that you don't want to miss on W2Mnet.com. Well, I guess for myself, for Sean and Paul, until we see you guys next time, if you're not living life to the max.
Not living life at all.
You know it.
Please.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.